So this morning we are going to talk about what is dependent syndrome according to the ICD classification. We'll talk about different factors that could play a role in addiction and the effects of the symptoms of intoxication, and then we will try to see what is psychic versus physical dependence. And we'll talk about withdrawal syndromes of some of the drugs, and then treatment options for the withdrawal syndromes. So, you know, the history is right. You know, this is a picture of depicting, you know, how some of the stimulatory substances are given historically, how the Chinese were imposed. With all the opium by the colonial powers at that time, and the depiction of many drugs in our popular culture. But the problem is real in how we deal with the patient, right? You know, in the end, it is the patient who would suffer with, it is the person who would suffer with all of these consequences. And one of the most troubling thing is how drugs could affect the lives of homeless people, especially children, and how they are vulnerable, especially in the developing economies. And we would try to see some of the factors that could cause some of us to be addicted to all some of the substances, right? So this is what we do. You should check this website. It is called as Faces of Meth, and there's a great talk by a doctor called Dr. Gabor Mate, in which he quotes the Egyptian poet Naguib Mahfouz. He says, "Nothing records the effect of a sad life so graphically as the human body. Addiction as a matter of fact, it creates so many things, right? You know, somebody could get HIV, somebody could get hepatitis C, valve degeneration, right? You say sexually transmitted disease, right? So before we go to the real lecture, we also talk about ICD classification of what is dependent syndrome, right? Three or more of the following together at some time during the previous year could classify that person to have dependent syndrome. A strong desire to take that substance, right? And difficulties controlling taking the substance. And a physiological withdrawal state when substance use has ceased, or use of the same with the intention of relieving or avoiding withdrawal symptoms. And not every drug will have physiological withdrawal, right? We'll talk about this. And tolerance such that increased doses of the psychoactive substances are required. Tolerance meaning that I don't require one beer to crawl all over the floor, but I need more, right? So it is tolerance. We need more substances to keep whatever the effects on the brain. And there is progressive neglect of alternative pressures or interests. Nothing interests them, right? You know, for an addict, there is nothing that could interest. So persisting with substance use despite clear evidence of overtly harmful consequences. So three or more of the following, if it is present during some time and during the previous year, we could classify them under ICD-10 as dependent syndrome. So we'll talk about biological, psychological, and social causes of addiction. Some of the biological, let's go through the some of the risk factors, right? You know, like here, early neurological brain development could lead to addiction. How? Let's say, for example, there is decreased sensory stimulation, right? You know, the child is not being treated properly, right? Maturation of the, the touching, the love, the care that we provide all stimulates the sensory systems towards neuronal maturation, right? If there is none such, it could lead to, it could affect the brain development. Maternal infections could develop, could affect the brain development. Neurotoxins like alcohol, right, could derange the architecture of the brain of the developing fetus, and adverse parenting and exposure to violence, right? You know, lack of dietary, regular diet and nutrition, all of this could lead to, could affect the brain development in the developing child. And then it could manifest as, of course, right, you know, disorders in emotion, right, you know, lack attention and social interaction as of how the child is interacting with the society. This could lead to probably learning difficulties and difficulties in school, and then this could lead to low self-esteem, which could lead to the child seeking solace in alcohol and drugs, feeling happy about it, right? Which could eventually lead to psychosocial difficulties and could lead to depression, and lack of money to sustain a habit could lead to violence and crime, and which could eventually lead to suicidal and other violent behaviors. And lack of self-regulation or emotion could lead to peer problems, and again, the same thing, right? So these are the different factors that could lead to a person having a predilection for addiction, right? I would not say we all, but most of us, right, you know, we enjoy a drink or two, right? But not all of us are addicts. What makes that some person to be dependent and to be addictive? There are many explanations for this, right? You know, there is biological explanation. Sorry, we'll go through this and so the biological explanation says that, sorry, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Right, in adoption studies, right, they studied children in adoption studies, and they found that some studies found that children whose parents were alcoholics, right, and they studied them, and the control are children whose parents are not alcoholics, they observed that 30% of the adopted children who did not know their biological parents, 30% of them ended up being alcoholics when compared to only 2% of the children whose biological parents are not alcoholics. So it is one, I would say, evidence that points out that there should be a biological factors to explain the dependent syndrome. And then the genetic factors say that there might be changes in receptor levels, right, you know, or the neurotransmitters, right, you know, like dopamine, there might be dysregulatory, change in how they are expressed, dopamine, adrenergic neurotransmission, and GABAergic neurotransmission, their receptors, as well as the number of, as well as the levels of neurotransmitters might be deranged, pointing out towards a biological cause towards explaining the dependent syndrome. And let's talk about psychological and sociological effects as well. So, and one more thing to explain is Cloninger's tri-dimensional personality disorder, personality theory. Dr. Cloninger, he said that he divided alcoholics based upon these three things: novelty seeking, harm avoidance, and reward dependence. So type 1 are the ones with low novelty seeking, in that they would not do, they just don't seek anything new. Harm avoidance is that they are very cautious. Reward dependence tend to be they tend to be very warm people, and addiction type 2 is just the opposite of addiction type 1. And based upon Cloninger's tridimensional personality theory, alcoholics could be divided. Again, there is a lot of controversy in how we are dividing the alcoholics into type 1 and type 2. Type 2 addiction type 2 tends to be in the younger ages, right, you know, where the risk taking is high, the reward dependence tends to be very low, but they're seeking newness constantly, right? You know, this type tends to be that of teenagers, right, you know, who indulge in binge drinking. Sometimes they might not just touch alcohol for a long period of time, but in contrast, type 1 people, they don't have any novelty seeking, the reward dependence is very high, and the harm avoidance is very high as well, right? These tend to be people who tend to drink, but you know, the harm avoidance is very high in these people, right? Addiction type 1 and type 2. And it is controversial in how we are dividing type 1 and type 2. And let's talk about the learning model for addiction, right? You know, the other psychological aspects of addiction. For drug consumption, there would be positive consequences and there would be negative consequences. Let's say for the example of, let's take my example, right? You know, not my example, but let's take a late teenager with a lot of pimples, late teens, lot of pimples, and trying to look for company, right? Ends up in a pub, right? Consumes alcohol, right? And then the consequences tend to be negative consequences and positive consequences. The positive consequences being it takes away the inhibition in this kid with a lot of pimples who's trying to seek company, and he ends up striking a conversation with a beautiful girl next to him, and then something happens, and he felt elated, and then these are the positive consequences, right? And now, what are the negative consequences? And striking a conversation with the beautiful girl next door, next seat, is not likened by her boyfriend, and he ends up beating this individual, so he ends up having bruises, right? And then hangover, injuries, and all of this, right? These are the negative consequences. The whole point that I'm trying to assert is that the negative consequences, when contrasted with the positive consequences, doesn't play a massive role, the reason why people get addicted, right? So this feeling of elation, right, this feeling of being able to strike a conversation or do many things, right, would completely override these negative consequences. And that's the reason why this would not deter me going back to this situation. Yeah? So this is one explanation. This is one explanation that could explain the psychology of addiction, right? Cloning is type 1 and type 2, and the influences of positive consequences, how they override the negative consequences. I just forget, I don't even care that there would be hangover, injuries, or intoxication deaths, right? This would be completely overridden by the positive consequences of increased social acceptance, self-esteem is increased, and attention and relaxation and reducing of anxiety. So it drives us to go back to this situation. You understand what I'm trying to say, right? So social and cultural factors which could lead to addiction and dependence. Performance pressures, right? Like, let's take the case of us, right? We talk about sleep, right? You know, before we go there, right? You know, we talk about sleep so eloquently, right? Oh, we need NREM sleep and REM sleep, and there should be a ratio of NREM versus REM to have a healthy night, right? Because it all fuses the memory properly. And you know what? Who disrespects this law is medical students and doctors, right? You know, we are the first ones to completely, throw this theory to air, because of course, as doctors in training, you know how much sleep they do get, right? You know, and as medical students, you actually know how much sleep you are getting, right? Despite knowing the fact that we need a good night's sleep to perform in the exam much better, we don't do that, right? And then let's talk about the social factors that might lead to dependence, performance pressures, right? So there is so much of pressure now, right? So we need coffee, right? Probably some of us need coffee, stimulants to match up with the pressures on us. And then One coffee might become two coffees tomorrow. And then at the end of the day, we have to sleep. Now we can't sleep. Some of us might need a wine, a glass of wine. But then eventually, this would not just stay on with just those two wines, right? Two glasses of wine. And then we wake up the next day, again, the same cycle repeats, right? Some of us might get addicted, right? Not every one of us, but this is how it plays out. And consumer society, industrialization, right? Of course, there is a lot of performance pressure due to industrialization, and then again, it might lead to dependence, right? Urbanization. Now there is much more square foot floor space between two individuals than it was before, right? Or in other words, we go to a city, right? Who do we speak to, right? Let's say if you go to a strange, let's take the case of you, right? You come to Grenada, right? I'm not talking about you, but you know, you come to a foreign city and then you leave your family behind, you leave your friends behind. Now there is a sense of loneliness, and this could lead probably to seek solace in something, right? But not every one of us would be addicted or dependent on seeking that any drugs of abuse, right? Being feeling very powerless as what happens in globalization, right? As a matter of fact, in the native peoples throughout the world, I'm not talking about one continent, in native peoples throughout the world, the addiction, right, the dependence is such a problem, right, because probably it is arising, it is stemming from the feeling of being powerless, especially in the Native American peoples, right, you know, there is a lot of alcohol dependence, and one theory might be the feeling of being powerless against the big corporate juggernaut, right, and the mobile society, the unstable contacts that we do have, which would not give that solace of love, right? You know, all the Facebook friends and, you know, right? All of this could lead, all of these are socio-cultural stress factors that could lead to dependent syndrome. So we spoke about, from the adoption studies, we theorized that there might probably some genes, right, that could make us vulnerable towards dependence. Right, the psychological theories, right, the Cloninger's tridimensional theory, which explains type 1 and type 2 alcoholisms, right, and it is completely, some people say it is valid, some people doesn't say it is not valid, and then some of the social characteristics that could explain why there is addiction, right, especially performance pressures, urbanization, globalization, and mobile society, right, the whole point, right, you know, about how addiction is so common in native peoples. And now, let's try to see what is the structure, right, that could explain all this addiction. So, importantly, ventral tegmental area and its projections to the nucleus accumbens, right, and throughout could be if we have to stress upon one circuit that is possibly causing us addiction is the projections from the ventral tegmental area to the nucleus accumbens, and these two areas are extremely important in explaining addictive behavior, especially the dopamine surge. Anything that we do pleasurable, there is dopamine surge in the ventral tegmental area, like for example sex, right, could leads to the dopamine surge, the reason why we go back to sex, right? Food, some parts of it, right? You know, not as much dopamine surge, but you know, food, of course, creates the dopamine surge. And drugs, right? Substances of abuse can lead to so much of dopamine surge, the reason why the addictive potential for some of the drugs, right? You know, the seeking behavior towards some of the drugs is so high. So all of this, the dopamine surge in the ventral tegmental area could be the basis for addictive behaviors. So we are talking about ventral tegmental area in the midbrain, right? So where are the dopaminergic neurons of the ventral tegmentum? This one, what is this? This skinny little thing is the medulla oblongata, right? What about this one? Pons, right? You can see the basilar artery here. You can see the basilar artery here as well. And what about this one? Probably rostral pons and caudal midbrain, and you can see the basilar artery just bifurcating as well. And then you can see the midbrain, right? This part is tegmentum, and this is tectum. So choice A is the best answer. Where are the dopaminergic neurons of the ventral tegmentum in the midbrain? Just a right-click refresh from memory. C, what about this one? Cerebral aqueduct. We are talking about midbrain, right? We're talking about midbrain, cerebral peduncles, a.k.a. cross cerebri. C is colliculus. And then if you were to divide the tegmentum, this is the ventral aspect of the tegmentum, and this is the dorsal aspect of the tegmentum, right? Just trying to tell you, right, you know, fusing neuroanatomy and, you know, just in case if you forgot. So dopaminergic neurons in the ventral tegmentum, they project to the nucleus accumbens, which is the pleasure center, and it goes throughout the brain, right? It is the surge in dopamine in the ventral tegmentum that leads towards any pleasurable things, right? You know, like food, sex, and drugs, all of this could lead to dopamine surge through the ventral tegmental pathways to the nucleus accumbens. They took a monkey, right? They inserted a electrode in this pathway, and then they made the monkey learn to press a button so that there would be electrical stimulation of the ventral tegmental pathways, right? And then the monkey learned how to self-stimulate electrically through the ventral tegmental pathway. And then they gave food, they gave a mating partner. The monkey never gave a damn to any of those, right? You know, it has completely switched over to electrically stimulating the ventral tegmental pathway. It is the same model that we can use it for human behavior as well. Nothing else gives pleasure, right? You know, it is so, the addiction is so overriding that food never motivates us, right? You know, sex never motivates us, but except abusing the substance, right? So that's the same thing, right? Electrical stimulation in the midbrain activates dopaminergic neurons in the ventral tegmental pathway, and a greater release of dopamine in the nucleus accumbens, and then dopamine receptor blockers like haloperidol reduce the rewarding effect. So midbrain dopaminergic neurons are dependent in reward-dependent learning. So different drugs act upon these two pathways differently. Like heroin acts at the level of ventral tegmentum, alcohol, cocaine, nicotine, and tetrahydrocannabinol acts at the level of nucleus accumbens. And this is the brain reward system. So let's describe the effects and symptoms of intoxication of the most important legal and illegal addictive substances, right? We can classify these drugs as sedatives and stimulants and hallucinogens. Alcohol, barbiturates, solvents, nicotine, ecstasy, cocaine, and amphetamines are stimulants, right? Angel dust is phencyclidine and cannabinoids. So we'll just talk about this as we speak about psychic and physical dependence. Psychic dependence is experiencing of impaired control or the craving, right? The psychological craving for a substance of abuse is called as psychic dependence. Physical dependence, right? Physical dependence includes tolerance and withdrawal symptoms. Tolerance is you know, you require more substance of abuse to get that same high, right? Than when compared to when a person started initially, right? That is tolerance. Withdrawal could be physical withdrawal right? In this physical withdrawal, it could be motor, or it could also be visceromotor. Visceromotor in the sense of raised heart rate, blood pressure changes, changes in sweating, etc. Right? So almost all the drugs would have psychic dependence, right? The craving. But only few drugs would show up with the physical dependence. Let's see what are those few drugs. We talk about opiates and alcohol. Alcohol, in moderation, right? It inhibits us, right? So the symptoms of alcohol detoxification include tachycardia, hypertension, hallucinations, nausea, and vomiting. And this could be some. This is life-threatening, and it requires ICU treatment. And these are the neurotransmitters that would be increased in alcohol withdrawal syndrome. Noradrenaline, dopamine, glutamate are increased. Let's see the effect of the drug and what would happen if you devoid the person of the same drug of abuse. See, the effect of the drug, alcohol inhibits noradrenaline, right? And this could lead to hypotension, etc., etc. Right? The drug effect, peripherally, dopamine would be decreased, right? And glutamate would be decreased. And in withdrawal, see, the exact opposite of this is happening, right? There would be increase of noradrenaline, which could explain hyperhidrosis, tachycardia, hypertension, trauma, tremor, and nausea. And this could lead also to psychotic symptoms, and increased glutamate excitotoxicity could lead to epileptic seizures. These are all the withdrawal symptoms in alcohol. The reason why they say that in withdrawal symptoms, there would be exact opposite of the effects of the drug. Let's take the example of a person, right? The person is chronically addicted to alcohol, right? What does alcohol do? Alcohol tries to mellow down, right? Inhibits the central nervous system. There is always a balance in our brain, right? You know, between excitation and inhibition. Let's say there is a middle path between excitation and inhibition. By chronically abusing alcohol, what would happen to this person's brain? They are constantly inhibited, right? You know, it is suppressed. The brain activity is suppressed. But the brain tries to fight back this inhibition and tries to get it towards the midline where it is properly stimulated and properly inhibited. But now, let's say, for example, the person suddenly stops taking this drug. So the brain's push against the alcohol would just go all the way towards the extreme, and the patient would go into a state of the exact opposite of the effects of the drug, right? In that, alcohol would decrease noradrenaline. The reason why, probably there is hypotension, right? Probably, and then it decreases dopamine and it decreases glutamate. But in withdrawal, it is the exact opposite, right? Sudden cessation of this substance of abuse would lead to the brain's push towards the midline, and then it would lead to all of these symptoms, psychotic symptoms, epileptic seizures, hypertension, right, you know, and it is a emergency as well. Let's see. Sorry. Okay, let me try to explain this much better, right? So let's say this is excitation and this is inhibition. And there is always a midline that the brain wants to achieve within itself, right? By taking alcohol, let's say, this is not the alveolus, this is a beer bottle, right, you know? By taking alcohol, we are pushing this midline, right, what the brain wanted to achieve, towards inhibition, right? So this is the current state of due to alcohol. But the brain wants to push it back towards the midline, right? Push back the equilibrium towards the midline. And if there is sudden cessation of alcohol, the brain's effort to push back towards the midline normality, it would override all the way towards the excitatory state, and this would lead to all of these withdrawal symptoms. And let's see, do you find any withdrawal symptoms? Will you find any withdrawal symptoms in cocaine? what type of drug is cocaine? Right? What type of drug is cocaine? It's a stimulant, right? So where would it push to, right? Would you find any withdrawal symptoms in cocaine? I don't think so, right? You would not find any of these things. Probably there is little, but not to this extent that there would be psychosis, epilepsy, hypertension, or tachycardia. So some of the medical treatment of alcohol withdrawal is extremely important, right? You know, since it is life-threatening, we might want to give diazepam to counter the convulsive properties, right? And there is increased glutamate level causing withdrawal seizures, right? We might want to give haloperidol to treat the psychosis, right? We might want to give clonidine to effectively counter the hypertension that is happening in this patient with alcohol withdrawal. As a matter of fact, you know, when you're preparing a patient for surgery, and if you take the history properly, if they are chronic alcoholics, and if you just admit them, they would have withdrawal symptoms, right? You know, so do you understand the concept of psychic dependence versus physical dependence? Psychic dependence could occur, is just the craving for the drug. It could occur for any drug, right? And physical symptoms, right? You know, it could be visceromotor or motor symptoms could occur in certain drugs, especially the, especially like alcohol, right? Which inhibits the brain, right? It is the brain's push, right, to achieve the normalcy, right, to achieve the midline between excitation and inhibition that leads to withdrawal symptoms, that leads to visceromotor and motor symptoms. It leads to seizures, which could be explained by the excitotoxicity happening in the brain. It could lead to hypertension, which could be explained by, the effects on the adrenergic system. It could explain the psychosis, which could be explained by increased levels of dopamine. And this is how we are going to treat. And this is important, and you have to know how you treat a patient with alcohol withdrawal. And let's see what is happening with opiates. There are two things. Right, of course, you know this thing, right? You know, there are two things that happen, right? Cold opiate detoxification and warm opiate detoxification. And cold opiate detoxification, the symptoms are like GI flu. It's not life-threatening, though. Unlike that of alcohol withdrawal, it is not so life-threatening. And the symptomatic medication should be against nausea, diarrhea, tachycardia, and the hyposomnia can continue for weeks. In that, you just cut down the opiate dose. And if you cut down the opiate dose, this is what happens to the patient, right? You know, the patient would have nausea, diarrhea, tachycardia, and hypertension, and symptoms like GI influenza. And it appears really, 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 really hard on the patient. So the other way that we can detox is by warm opiate detoxification, where we are substituting methadone for opiates. Right? The reason why methadone is actually a drug, the reason why we are giving methadone, we would just explain just now. There is reduction of methadone dose over approximately 3 weeks, right? So the problem is they can, as a matter of fact, the patients can get hooked on to methadone, and they might have to stay in a closed ward for a long time. So there is a high chance of breaking off as well. Why are we using methadone, right? You know, this is the severity of the withdrawal, right? Let's see what is happening with morphine, right? For morphine, the severity of the withdrawal is so high when compared to the methadone. Slowly you taper off the dose of methadone that you are giving to the patient so that there will be no withdrawal symptoms. So this is cold opiate detoxification, where you are just cutting off the morphine, and the withdrawal symptoms would be so high that might be troubling, that is seemingly troubling to the patient, but they are not as life-threatening as we see in alcohol withdrawal. The reason why we slowly switch over the patient from morphine to methadone, and we slowly taper off the dose of methadone after a period of time, and this is what we refer to as warm detoxification. So far, what's the story so far? You You know now that there is, it is addiction and dependence is biological, psychological, and has social factors causing dependence syndrome and addiction. And then in psychological factors, we try to explain Cloninger's tridimensional pathway as well as the other psychological factors that could explain dependence, right? How positive consequences would be so overriding all the negative consequences, and thus we can learn probably dependence and addiction to a substance. And then we spoke about the different drugs, stimulants and inhibitants on the central nervous system, and what happens when you cut off the drugs suddenly in a substance in a person who has been abusing these drugs for a long time. Not every drug would have physical dependence, but only some drugs that inhibits the nervous system has physical dependence, right? And we learned about psychic dependence and physical withdrawal symptoms. We learned about alcohol withdrawal, right? You know, the psychosis, there is increased hypertension, and there is seizure activity due to increased glutamate levels. And we spoke about warm detoxification and cold detoxification in terms of opium abuse. And why do we use methadone? Methadone, you know, we are just substituting one drug for the next one. So that, and then we taper off this methadone over a long period of time. And then drug rehabilitation, right? You know, in the methadone program, this is what people want to achieve, right? improvement of the physical condition. It causes reduction of the relapses, reduction in use of other drugs, and then slowly taper off the methadone dose and complete abstinence, which would eventually lead to competence in life management and contentment. And it could also lead to social integration, employment, and drug-free contracts. All of this should be taken care of during the methadone program. But most importantly, people who are seeking a substance of abuse probably are lacking that love that and the solace that is required, right? The reason why some people are vulnerable versus others, you know, who would cope up with the situations, there are many factors to explain, probably biological and psychological factors to explain. And I would urge you, right, you know, there is an amazing TED talk called as The Power of Addiction and the Addiction to Power by Gabor Mate. Amazing talk, right, you know. I would urge you, if you have time, just it's a 10-minute talk, to see this TED talk, how he explains the current issues of globalization and people feeling helpless, you know, are making them vulnerable to addiction. That's the end. Thank you.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.